God's word to his world. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. There came a man who was sent from God. His name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all men might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to every man was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testifies concerning him. He cries out, saying, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me has surpassed me, because he was before me.' From the fullness of his grace, we have all received one blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known."
Some years back, a radio station rang up the British ambassador in Washington and asked him what he would like for Christmas. And being British, he said, "Well, I'm quite easily pleased. You know, a box of crystallized fruits will keep me happy." And on Christmas Day, on a feature called Around the Embassies, the journalist reported that they'd interviewed several ambassadors and asked them what they wished for Christmas. The French ambassador told us he would like to see peace in the world's trouble spots. The Russian ambassador told us he would like to see an end to world poverty. And, well, the British ambassador told us he would like a box of crystallized fruits. What do you want for Christmas this year? I mean, a Dalek voice changer mask would be kind of fun. But what do you really want? Could be that you just want to see your children happy. Or you long for a family rift to be healed. Perhaps you're thinking of someone you love who is ill, and the best present you could think of would be for them to get the all clear. Perhaps the best present you could think of would be for your husband or your wife to give you more time this year. Or perhaps it's Christmas when you feel most alone. Friends are all caught up in their families, and all you really want is a family of your own to celebrate with. Perhaps you're dreading Christmas. Perhaps it'll be the first year without someone whom you love. And they won't be there. And all you really want is them. Strange thing, isn't it? This frenzy to buy one another things that we can't really even afford, when all we know is that it's not things we want at Christmas. It's people. It's people. There's an old children's story called The Velveteen Rabbit. Let me read a little bit from it. The Velveteen Rabbit turned to the old, wise, experienced skin horse in the nursery and asked, "What is real? Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle?" The skin horse replied, real isn't how you're made. It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long time, not just to play with you, but really loves you, then you become real. Does it happen all at once or bit by bit? Oh, it doesn't happen all at once, said the skin horse. You become. It takes a long time. Generally, by the time you're real, most of your hair has been loved off and your eyes drop out and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But once you are real, you cannot become unreal again. It lasts for always. Things don't make us real. Relationships make us real. Loving and being loved. And that's why Christmas is the best of times and the worst of times. Time when you gather up all the people in your life and you see whom you belong to. And I've no doubt for many here, Christmas is something you're really looking forward to and it'll be a wonderful time. But for many, Christmas just twists the knife. Because there isn't anyone to gather up. Or the one person you want to belong to isn't there. Or there's a whole crowd of you and you've come from far and wide to celebrate Christmas as usual at great Aunt Agatha's and we're family. But all Christmas does is rub our faces in the fact that we don't really enjoy the fact that we belong to one another. They reckon that at Christmas a third of all families will have a major row. I think that's why we persist with turkey and all the trimmings. When the Victorians first branded Christmas, Christmas dinner was a special treat. But to a generation of people who've eaten, Thai green curry down the local gastro pub before the age of 7, roast turkey is just not that exotic. And if you're thinking, let's lay on a really special treat, it's not obvious that you would think Brussels sprouts. But if you're thinking, what would keep Uncle Roger quiet for an hour, get him to prepare a couple of kilos of sprouts. We're just not used to all being together under one roof and having to talk to one another. So we need the drama of peeling the potatoes and laying the table and lighting the fire and getting in the drink and giving everyone something to do. And up till dinner, things go pretty well. It's afterwards when people have eaten too much, drunk a little bit too much, and they're too sleepy to really want to help with the washing up. And Dad, suddenly really busy, just got to set up the new PlayStation for the children, And the brother-in-law just sits there and he doesn't lift a finger. And you are fuming because that is so typical. Just take. That's what he uses us. He uses us, he does. And you're in the kitchen with your husband. You're saying, John, when are you going to say something to that brother of yours? And eventually the decks are cleared and they're just looking forward to a family game of Monopoly when the teenagers announce they're off to see their mates. And so the remnant collapses in front of only fools and horses. And halfway through, someone notices that there's the great escape on the other side and tempers flare. Grown men start saying, but I was here first. And anyway, last year we all had to sit through Sound of Music so that your wife could... Is this it? Loving, being loved? Is that as good as it gets? And every year we hope that somehow Christmas will make everything better. So often Christmas just makes things worse. But the fact is that the first Christmas is about the God who came to make things better. I don't know what you think of God. For many of us, God is a little bit like the Loch Ness Monster. Some people claim to have caught glimpses of him, but when you compare their stories, it turns out they all have slightly different ideas of what they think they've seen. So, well, God may well be out there somewhere beyond the stars looking down at us, but it's hard to feel like he's really very relevant to what we're going through right now, because it's hard to feel like he really cares. Because if he cared, you'd think he'd do something. You think he'd come out of his hiding and show his face. And Christmas says that is exactly what God has done. We tend to think that religion is the kind of spiritual version of looking for the Loch Ness Monster. It's for people who, for some reason, are interested in trying to track God down. And so we have documentaries on the TV called things like The Long Search, as though God is hiding from us. And Christmas says it's just the other way round. Christianity is about a God who has come to track us down. Way back in the Old Testament, he promised he would come. His people, the Jews, clung on to those promises, like the prophecy in Isaiah 9 we read right at the beginning. They longed for the child to be born, the one who would bring light into their darkness. And John says, that one, the one we have been waiting for, has come. Look at what he says. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world didn't recognize him. Did he catch who John says this child is? The world was made through him. Do you see what he's saying? He's saying, if you had been one of the shepherds in that stable, looking down at that face of that baby lying in that straw, you would have been looking down at the face of the one who made the world. You would have been looking down at the face of God. So John's claim is a very big one. John's claim is that Jesus is not just another kind of God enthusiast who's come to help us in our search for God. His claim is that Jesus is God himself come looking for us. And immediately we are suspicious. Because why has he come? What does he want from us? And it's easy to think about Christmas as being about God asking something from us, asking us to give him a bit of religion or pull our moral socks up and do our bit for charity. And you need to know Christmas is not about God asking. It's about God giving. It is about the God who has come to give us the very thing we most long for. I was reading about an elderly lady who was struggling to pay her rent. And her church had got together a fund to pay it for her. And someone was sent to take it round. And they knocked on the door and there was no answer. They were sure she was in. She knocked again. No answer. Eventually they went away. And it turned out that the old lady didn't answer because she thought it was the landlord come to demand the rent. In fact, it was someone from the church come to give her the money. And we assume that when God comes knocking on our door, it's to make demands on us. So we keep the door closed. We won't let him in. And actually, when God comes knocking, it's to say, I've come to give you the very thing that you most long for, the thing that you most need. Do you see in verse 12? Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Jesus has come to give us the right to have a father-child relationship with the God who made us. You say, that's not what I want. That's not on my wish list. I don't particularly want a relationship with God. That's not my scene. Think of it like this. The whale was made for the ocean. The ocean is the environment in which a whale is free to swim and leap and sing, and it's free to be fully whale. And as the whale was made for the ocean, we were made for God, to be his children, to love and be loved by him. And the reason we long to love and be loved is precisely because we're made in the image of a God of love. And it's his love that, you see, sets us free to be fully human, to love and be loved in the way that we were created to love. It's his love that makes us real. And the reason God seems so far away from us is not because he is hiding. It's because we've walked out on him. You see, verse 12 pulls us up short. Have a look at it carefully. Hold on. To those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Hold on, why do we need Jesus to give us the right to become children of God? And the answer is because without him, we don't have the right. Not anymore. We've no right to be his children because we've not treated him as our father. We've not listened to him. We've not followed his ways. What we've done is we've snapped our fingers in his face and we've gone off and we've done our own thing because we thought we knew better. And we called it enlightenment. But all it's done is leave us in the dark. We're like a whale that has been beached. It was made for the ocean. And on the beach, it's not free to be fully whale. It's blowing and gasping and thrashing its tail. It's fighting for its life. And the Bible says that's us without God. We thought that walking out on him would set us free. But it's left us gasping for air and thrashing around and fighting for our lives. We long to love and be loved. So how come love hurts so much? Well, when a whale is out of the ocean and on the beach, well, it's hard for it to be all that a whale was meant to be. And when we walk out of our relationship with God, the relationship that we were made for, well, it's hard to be all that a human being was meant to be. We thrash around and we say things we wish we'd never said, and we do things we regret, and we hurt the people we most love. And all the while we're running out of breath, and we get sick and we die. And all the while we're thinking, is this as good as it gets? And the Bible's answer is no. No, the world as we know it is not how things are meant to be. This is what happens when you walk out on God, and we've ended up like a beached whale. And what a beached whale needs more than anything else in the whole world is for someone to lift it up off the beach and put it back in the ocean. And Christmas is good news of great joy for all people, because it says that the God who made us has come to pick us up and put us back in the ocean. He's come to put us back into the relationship with him that we were made for. He's come to restore us to the love that will make us real again. And we think, how does a baby do that? Well, do you remember the gifts from the wise men, gold and incense and myrrh? We say the gifts from the wise men. We all know it was actually their wives who bought them for them. You know, Mary's had a baby. Will you go and take the present? Mary? I didn't even know she was pregnant. Yes, I bought the present. Will you take it round? Fair play to them. In many ways, they're good presents. No small parts, no batteries needed. But myrrh, it's what you embalm dead bodies with. What sort of a present is that to give to a baby? Turns out for this baby, it's just the right sort of present. Turns out this baby was born to die. And I often talk to people who think Jesus' death on the cross was just a tragic accident. But again and again, Jesus makes it clear to his disciples that the cross was why he came. You see, walking out on God means we've not been very good at being human beings. We've hurt other people. We've hurt the planet. We've hurt ourselves. We've hurt the God who made us. And in his justice, God says, for all that we have done, that there is a price that needs to be paid. And then in his love, he turns round and says, for all you have done, I will pay. And there on the cross, for everything that we are guilty of, God himself pays. It's like the bill at the end of a meal. He covers it for us. It means there's nothing more for us to pay. It means we can be forgiven and restored to the relationship that we were made for. And that's why Jesus, the Son of God, comes to us and says, because I came, you can come in on the relationship that I have with my Father. I've given you the right to become a child of God. So when you look at the cross, you don't see a tragic accident. You see the God who made us, picking us up and putting us back in the ocean. We think, God's not that bothered about us. But do you see how bothered he is? The God we have walked out on, the God whose name we've used as a swear word, he comes after us. And coming after us meant not just being born in a stable, it meant dying on a cross. That's how much you matter to him. That's how much he wants you to be his child. Cost him everything. But that's how much he wants you to have the gift that you most long for. We know that things don't make us real. And God says that even other people can't make us real because they're too small, too frail. And when we lean on them and ask them to give us our identity, we're putting more weight on them than they can bear. Either we crush them or they let us down in some way. But God is big enough. God is big enough to make us real. And so when God calls us his children, he gives us an identity that will never go rusty and can't get stolen. And you don't get too old for it. And you can't get fired from it. And it won't end in divorce. And even death can't snatch it away. He says, this is who you are. This is who you really are. You're my child. And I love you. And however shabby and worn you get, I'll never let you go. Friends, here is the love that makes us real. And when Jesus comes knocking on our door, that's the gift that he's come to give us. And that's why it's such a tragedy that this Christmas there'll be so many who won't open the door to him. Look at verse 10 again. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world didn't recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Jesus comes to that which is his own. It's a phrase that means something like his home. Jesus comes to the place where he belongs. The people who you'd think would open up and let him in. But this year, as every year, all round the world, people will be celebrating Christmas. They'll be opening presents round a tree and eating turkey and singing carols even. But they won't receive Jesus. They won't let him in. They'll just leave him out in the cold. And some keep him out because they don't see why they should let a first century carpenter into their lives. It feels like such a sort of random thing to do. It's like letting a stranger come barging in. If you've not looked into this as an adult, look again at what this first century carpenter did. Look again at what he claimed. John's claim, you see, is that he doesn't come into your life as a stranger. He comes to you as the God who made you. He comes to you as the God who knows you better than you know yourself. See, when he knocks on the door of your life, he's asking to come into where he belongs. Or some keep him out because they think, well, he may well be God, but, you know, frankly, right now, I don't need God, because what would God know about what I'm going through? But you see the sort of God he is? He's not a far away sort of a God. He's the God who came near. The one who was born as a baby. So he doesn't just know us because he made us. He knows us because he knows what it's like to be us. You've been misunderstood by those closest to you? So has he. You stood by the grave of someone you love? So is he. You've been betrayed by a friend? So is he. He's tasted the very worst of what this world has to throw at us. Or some keep him out because they think he will spoil the party. When you think what Jesus has come to bring, don't think rules. Don't think rituals. Think relationship. Think of the whale being restored to the ocean. The ocean doesn't kind of oppress the whale. The ocean sets it free to be whale. And Jesus has not come to take your life from you. He says he's come to give you life, life in all its fullness. And the tragedy is that this Christmas, some will still reject him. But others will receive him. Do you see verse 12? Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. In the school nativity play, little Johnny had set his heart on playing Joseph, but Miss Harbottle went and cast him as the innkeeper. And he was bitterly disappointed. He cried hot tears all the way home. But during rehearsals, he dreamt up his revenge. On the day of the performance, anxious parents filed into the school hall. The lights went down, the curtain went up, and in walked Joseph and Mary struggling along beside him. And they came to the inn and knocked, and Johnny the innkeeper opened the door, and Joseph explained, "We have travelled a long way, and my wife is going to have a baby. Is there any room in the inn for us to stay?" And Johnny the innkeeper, quick as a flash, "Why, certainly, come right on in." So the Christmas story ran a little different that year. And there is a long history of people saying to Jesus, "Sorry, there's no room. You can't come in." And wouldn't it be wonderful if, for you, the Christmas story ran a little different this year? You see who he is, and you say to him, "Come in. Come and take your rightful place in my life." We just sung it in the carol, "Where meek souls will receive him, still the dear Christ enters in." And when he comes to give you what you most long for. He comes to give you the relationship that will make you real. He makes you a child of God. Wouldn't it be wonderful this Christmas if you opened up to him? I'm going to step off my perch, but let me tell you what we're going to do now. After the talk every week at Emmanuel, we give ourselves time to reflect a little bit, just sort of take in what we've been hearing. And normally we kind of pass a hat round and have questions from the floor. I think pressure of time means we probably won't do the hat and the questions this week. But we will have some questions up on the screen just to ponder for a couple of minutes. You may like to be quiet, but you need to know it's not exam conditions. So do feel free just to talk them through with a friend. So just a couple of minutes to reflect on some of these things.